Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Introduction to Secure Socket Layer Basics. Today's presenter is Everett Turner. Everett is a staff software engineer on the WebSphere MQL2 support team located in Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. Everett has been providing technical support for the WebSphere MQ product running on distributed platforms for the past 5 years. Everett has worked for IBM for the past 10 years, ranging from development to test, and is now working customer support. Everett has given several presentations on utilizing SSL within WebSphere MQ. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Everett.
Good morning. Thank you, Joseph, for that wonderful introduction. And I would also like to thank all of you for attending this morning's webcast. As mentioned, today I will be presenting an Introduction to Secure Sockets Layer, or SSL Basics. Next slide, slide 2. My agenda today will be as following: Secure Sockets Layer, or SSL, Cryptography, Symmetric Key Encryption, Cryptography, Asymmetric Key Encryption, the Hash Function, the Digital Signature, Impersonation, the Digital Certificate. Then we will take a look at how it works, the SSL Handshake, followed by some vocabulary, SSL key terms, an SSL overview review, and then finally, questions and answers. Next slide, page 3. In today's information-rich society, most companies and individuals are using computers for data transfer. If you have ever made an online hotel reservation, checked your bank account online, or made any other purchases over the Internet, you have definitely used Secure Sockets Layer, or SSL. Check the Internet website address or the URL. If it begins with HTTPS as opposed to HTTP, then you are using SSL, and your information is being securely transmitted over the Internet. The S in HTTPS equals HTTP plus SSL. Network and system administrators are faced with the ever-increasing challenge of securing the information that flows over the Internet. Secure Sockets Layer, or SSL, is a protocol that enables two parties to communicate with privacy and data integrity. Page 4. Okay, the Secure Sockets Layer provides an industry standard for transmitting data in a secure manner over an insecure network. When SSL is enabled, it provides security by way of the transport layer, usually TCP/IP. The SSL protocol is widely deployed in both internet and intranet applications. SSL combines four techniques to combat three major network security problems: eavesdropping, tampering, and impersonation. To prevent eavesdropping, SSL defines methods for data encryption using symmetric and asymmetric key encryption. To detect tampering and provide message integrity, SSL uses a digital certificate, a digital signature. To prevent impersonation, SSL performs authentication by checking for a digital certificate. Let's now see how SSL uses these techniques to combat the three security problems. Next slide, page 5. In this presentation, I will illustrate the use of Secure Sockets Layer between two individuals, Bob and Alice. Bob is a systems administrator in charge of a website that sells widgets. Customers purchase widgets online from Bob's internet website. At the end of the business day, Bob transmits a file with all his daily sales data to a bank. Alice works for the bank. She works in the funds transfer department. Alice receives Bob's daily transmission that is sent over the internet or an insecure network. A network hacker intercepts Bob's transmission, opens the file, and views all his message data. all Bob's customers' personal information, including their credit card information, has now been compromised. This is an example of eavesdropping. Bob's data can be intercepted by someone listening in on the transmission line. To prevent this, Alice's bank uses SSL technology. SSL uses cryptography or encryption techniques to prevent eavesdropping. Next slide, page 6. Cryptography is the process of converting between readable text called plain text to an unreadable form called ciphertext. The sender converts the plain text message to ciphertext, and this part of the process is called encryption. The ciphertext is then transmitted to the receiver. The receiver then receives the ciphertext, converts the message back to its plain text form, and this is the process called decryption. The conversion involves a sequence of mathematical operations that change the appearance of the message during transmission, but it does not affect the content. Cryptographic techniques can ensure confidentiality and protect messages against unauthorized viewing or eavesdropping because an encrypted message is not understandable. This method of cryptography is known as symmetric key encryption. The sender and the recipient secretly agree on an algorithm to use to encrypt and decrypt the information. A very simple example is the sender would add, let's say, N to each byte of information, and then the recipient would then subtract N from each encrypted information. Then they would just get back to the original message, but then you do not change the original content of the message. The sender side encrypts with the secret key, and the receiver can reverse the algorithm to decrypt the information. The secret key is known only to the sender and receiver, and it is only good for this one session. Next slide, page 7. This kind of security does, however, pose one problem. What happens when you're faced with a large number of users? How do you and the partner secretly agree on an algorithm or secret key and keep it private? This is known as the key distribution problem. The secret key has to be known only by the sender and receiver. The solution is to publish an algorithm or public key for everyone to use to encrypt information being sent to you. And then you use a private algorithm or private key to decrypt the information. The public algorithm cannot be reverse engineered to figure out or create the private algorithm. Next slide, page 8. To demonstrate asymmetric key encryption using public-private key pairs, let's look back at our example using Bob and Alice. Bob here, you see, is the sender, so he is the client. He wants to send his plain text data to Alice. Alice is the receiver, so she is the server. She will receive the plain text data from Bob. The server or receiver side generates the public-private key pair. The private key stays resident, and the public key is made available for the sender. The sender, Bob in this case, uses Alice's public key to encrypt his plain text data and transmit it as ciphertext. Alice receives the transmission as ciphertext, decrypts it using her private key, revealing Bob's original plain text data. Next slide, page 9. A key's strength is determined by the number of bits used to make up the key algorithm. The more bits used to make up the encryption algorithm, the stronger the key. There are two types of encryption algorithms, block cipher and stream cipher. RC2 is from RSA Data Security Incorporated, and this is an example of a block cipher algorithm. That means it encrypts the data by blocks, 8 bytes long, with a key length of 40 bits, 64 bits, or you could have 128 bits. RC4 is also from RSA Data Security Incorporated. This is a stream cipher algorithm. This algorithm operates on each byte of data as opposed to a block of bytes, with a key length of 40 bits, 64 bits, and 128 bits. DES, D-E-S, pronounced DES, is the U.S. Data Encryption Standard. This is also a block cipher algorithm, and it encrypts the data on 8-byte-long blocks and a key length of 56 bits. Triple DES is a variation of DES, which is a key length of 168 bits. In order from fastest to slowest, they are RC4, DES, RC2, and finally Triple DES. There is a trade-off between speed and key length. Although a key could be any size, the standard key length that are used are as follows. Asymmetric keys for 768 bits is considered a low strength key. 1024 bits is considered a medium strength key. And 2048 bits is considered a high strength key. For symmetric keys, 256 bits is considered strong encryption. Next slide, page 10. Since network hackers cannot make use of information obtained through intercepting data transmissions, the next thing they attempt to do is alter or change the contents of the data in some way. You hear nowadays that network hackers are adding worms or viruses to data transmissions that will be corrupting a system if they're open. Well, SSL uses a hash function to detect data tampering or data manipulation. Next slide, page 11. To be able to detect if someone has tampered with the message while it was in transit, SSL makes use of a one-way hash function. The hash function is an algorithm. A message is passed through the hash function, which results in a short fixed-length number, which is unique to the contents of this message. There is no way to determine the message from the one-way hash. The short fixed-length number is known as the message digest or message authentication code, or MAC. The MAC is transmitted along with the message. If there is any change to the message during transmission, it will result in a different message digest or MAC, and the receiver will instantly know that tampering has occurred. There are two choices of hash function that can be used. There is SHA and MD5. SHA, or SHA, stands for the Secure Hash Algorithm, and MD5 stands for Message Digest Version 5. The choice between MD5 and SHA is also a trade-off between security and performance. The SHA algorithm produces a 160-bit output, and the MD5 algorithm only a 128-bit output. This is compared with the fact that MD5 algorithm is much faster in calculating the message digest, or MAC, the message authentication code. When plain text is encrypted, the message digest is sent with the message. The receiver can generate a digest for the same message and compare it with the sender's digest. If the two digests matches, this verifies the integrity of the message and provides assurance that the message has not been modified during transmission. Any tampering with the message during transmission almost certainly results in a different message digest. Next slide, page 12. SSL uses a digital signature to combine the use of the one-way hash function and public-private key encryption. The message is hashed to provide a number, which is the hash number or message digest, and this hash number or message digest is encrypted using the private key of the sender to create the digital signature. The encrypted message, along with the signed hash, is transmitted to the receiver. The recipient of the message, in this case Bob, as you see here, can decrypt the digital signature and the message using Alice's public key to get her hash number. He then runs the plain text message received from Alice through the hash function to get a hash number. If these numbers match, then the message did come from Alice, and also Bob knows the message hasn't been changed since it was signed. Next slide, page 13. Cryptographic security protocols must agree on the algorithm to use on a secure channel connection. Both parties must specify and agree on what encryption algorithm to use. They also must specify and agree on what hash function to use to generate the message digest. This combination is called the cipher spec. In this slide, the encryption algorithms are highlighted in blue and the hash algorithms are highlighted in red. Also notice the encryption bits that make up the key in the middle column. Also included in this list are the latest cipher specs, TLS and FIPS. The transport layer security, or TLS protocol, evolved from the secure sockets layer protocol. Although SSL and TLS are similar, the two protocols do not interoperate. A cipher suite is a suite of cryptographic algorithms used by an SSL connection. Cipher suites define specific combinations of algorithms. A suite comprises of three distinct algorithms. One, the key exchange and authentication algorithm used during the SSL handshake. Two, the encryption algorithm used to encipher the data. And three, the MAC, or message authentication code algorithm, used to generate the message digest. Next slide, page 14. Okay, we now know that SSL prevents eavesdropping and tampering, but what about impersonation? Next slide, page 15. To illustrate impersonation, let's say Alice wants to send her public key to Bob so that he can use it to encrypt his transmissions to her. Tom, a network hacker, intercepts her message, generates his own public-private key pair, and replaces Alice's public key with his own before sending it on to Bob. Bob receives the key and uses it to encrypt his messages. Tom can now intercept the messages and decrypt them with his private key. Tom has impersonated Alice to gain access to Bob's information. This is known as the man-in-the-middle attack. How could Bob have known that he did not receive Alice's public key? This leads to the question, how can I trust a public key? Next slide, page 16. Bob and Alice generate digital certificates. Digital certificates provide protection against impersonation because a digital certificate binds a public key to its owner. That owner can be an individual or any other entity. Digital certificates are also known as public key certificates because they give you assurance about the ownership of a public key when you use an asymmetric key scheme. A digital certificate contains the public key for an entity and is a statement that the public key belongs to that entity. When the certificate is for an individual entity, the certificate is called a personal certificate or user certificate. When the certificate is for a certification authority, the certificate is called a CA certificate or signer certificate. A digital certificate contains information about the individual, for example, their name, their company, and it also contains their public key. There are two types of digital certificates. There is a certificate request, and there is also what's known as a self-signed certificate. The certificate request is a certificate that is requested from an external certification authority. The certificate will also cost money if it is requested from an external certification authority. The certificate request is sent to a trustworthy certification authority, or CA for short. The CA then receives the digital certificate and public key, and it is sent as an ARM file, or if it's formatted in ASCII, or a .cer or .serve file if it's formatted in binary. The CA then verifies the certificate information. The CA then digitally signs the certificate and builds a new public key. The CA then returns the file back, and it is received back into the owner's key repository. This has now become their personal CA-signed user certificate. The CA that signed the certificate must be listed as trusted in the partner's signed certificate's key repository. This can be well-known trusted CAs can sometimes have their certificates preloaded in a signer certificate's key repository. Then, for internal use only or for testing purposes, it is also possible to use self-signed certificates. These are not signed by an external CA, but instead created and signed using whichever digital certificate management tool your company chooses to use. For example, the product that I support, WebSphere MQ, uses IBM Global Security Kit, or GSKit on Windows and Unix, to create a key repository, the key.kdp or JKS Java Key Store. RACF is used to create a key ring on ZOS. These tools provide a way to create a storage location for certificates and their associated keys. In our example, I have Alice creating a certificate request and sending it to an outside CA. She receives the file back, and that becomes her personal CA signed certificate. The CA that verified and signed Alice's certificate has to be listed in Bob's Signer Certificates Trust Store, and you see that at the lower left-hand corner of the screen, that Alice's CA signed certificate is loaded in Bob's Signer Certificate Trusted Key Store. Bob, on the other hand, is using a self-signed certificate. He verifies his certificate information and signs the certificate himself. He must then extract the CA that self-signed his certificate and send it to Alice. Alice would then add this certificate to her trusted signer certificate key database repository. Next slide, page 17. Okay, to obtain a digital certificate, one needs to send one's identity to the certification authority. This information is sent in a standard format that is defined by the X500 series of standards. This identifying information is accompanied by the sender's public key. Here, you see the information listed in Alice's certificate request. The same information is required in a self-signed certificate. You have the CN, or common name, that describes who the certificate belongs to. You see here the locality where Alice is located, which is in New York City. The organization name, which would be her bank or the name of the organization. The organization unit name, which is Alice's organization unit, is the funds transfer department. Then you also have listed the country. Next slide, slide 18. A digital certificate also has two dates associated with it. It has a date from which it is valid, and it has a date after which it becomes invalid, or an expiry date. When a certificate is received, it can be checked against the list to ensure that it is not invalid or has not been revoked. A certification authority can revoke a certificate which is no longer trusted by publishing it in a certificate revocation list, or CRL. Next slide, page 19. Okay, now let's put it all together and see how it works. The SSL handshake. Next slide, page 20. In this slide, you see the SSL client, Bob, sends a client hello message that lists cryptographic information such as the SSL version and the cipher spec to be used, or he can send a list of cipher suites that he can support. The SSL server, Alice, responds with the server hello, the session identification, or session ID, and she acknowledges the cipher spec, or the cipher suite chosen from the list provided by the SSL client. Additionally, the server, Alice, also sends her personal digital certificate and public key. This message is encrypted and the hash signed with her private key. If the server requires a personal digital certificate for client authentication, the server also sends the client a certificate request that includes a list of the types of certificates supported and the distinguished name of acceptable certification authorities, or CAs. The SSL client, Bob, receives the encrypted message, decrypts the message using Alice's CA's public key, checks the hash, verifies the digital signature on the SSL server's digital certificate, and checks the validity period of the certificate. The client, Bob, now knows that the server he is communicating with is definitely Alice. Notice he also now has Alice's public key that was included with the message. Next slide, page 21. If the SSL server, Alice, sent a certificate request, the SSL client, Bob, responds by sending his personal certificate and public key. This message is encrypted and the hash signed with the client, Bob's private key. The SSL server, Alice, decrypts the message with Bob's CA public key. The SSL server then checks the hash, verifies the signature on the client certificate, and checks the validity period of the certificate. The server, Alice, now knows that the client she is communicating with is definitely Bob. The server then sends back an acknowledgement to the client encrypted with the just received owner-verified public key. Next slide, page 22. The SSL client receives the acknowledgement and then sends a random byte string, which is the secret key to be used for encryption of subsequent message data. The random byte string itself is encrypted with the server's Alice's just received owner-verified public key. The SSL client then sends the SSL server a finished message, which is encrypted with the new secret key, indicating that the client part of the SSL handshake is complete. The SSL server sends the SSL client a finished message, which is also encrypted with the secret key, indicating that the server part of the handshake is complete. For the duration of this SSL session, the SSL server and SSL client will now exchange messages that are symmetrically encrypted with the shared secret key. This is now a secure line. Now we see how SSL uses asymmetric key encryption, or public-private key pairs, in order to reach the ultimate goal of symmetric key, or secret key encryption. SSL uses the digital signature to make sure none of the messages were compromised or tampered with during transmission. SSL uses the digital certificate to authenticate the user and also verify the owner of the public key being distributed. Next slide, slide 23. Okay, now let's quickly take a review of some SSL terminology. A certificate is a code that follows the X509 standard. It includes the sender's verified identity, the sender's public key, the certification authority's digital signature, and also an expiry date. The personal or user certificate is created using a digital certificate management tool of choice. Consists of a public-private key pair and also bonds an identity to the public key. A certification authority, a CA or signer certificate, is a trustworthy authority. It includes a well-known public key to use for encryption of requests for a certificate. It is added to a key store when you want to trust all the certificates signed by that certificate. A certificate request. This is a request for a certificate to be signed. It includes the sender's identity. It includes the distinguished name, or DN, that follows the well-known X500 series format. It also includes the sender's public key. It generally costs money, although sometimes it could be used by an internal certification authority. Self-signed certificates. A certificate that is basically signed by itself. It also includes a distinguished name, or DN, that follows the well-known X500 format, and it consists of a public-private key pair, and it binds an identity to the public key. Key repository, a place where certificates and keys are stored. That can be a trust store, a key database, or for ZOS, a key ring. Next slide, page 24. A private key. A private key is a code that is not shared with anyone and known only to you. It is used to decrypt information encrypted with the counterpart public key. A public key. A public key is a key made available to everybody. The public key code is required to decrypt information encrypted with the counterpart private key. Next slide, page 25. Okay. In this Secure Sockets Layer presentation, I explained that SSL is a protocol that was introduced to combat three main internet security problems: eavesdropping, tampering, and impersonation. Eavesdropping is solved by using encryption techniques. Tampering is detected using the hash function and a digital signature. Impersonation is resolved by using a digital certificate, which is distributed by way of asymmetric key encryption using the public-private key pairs. The digital certificate validity is done through the certificate revocation list, or CRL checking. Applications using SSL must specify the location and path to get to the key repository. This is done by specifying an SSL key R parameter. A matching cipher spec or cipher suite must be indicated on both ends of the connection. The receiver must indicate whether the client must send over its personal digital certificate. This is done by specifying required on the channel, which means the client's certificate is required, or optional, which specifies the client may optionally send a digital certificate if it has one, or if it does not have it to send, if it does not present one. If optional is specified, secret key generation is done by the client after it receives and verifies the server's personal digital certificate. SSL CRLNL specifies the location of the certificate revocation name list, if one is used. Next slide, page 26. Secure Sockets Layer, or SSL, is a protocol that enables two parties to communicate with privacy and data integrity. The secure sockets layer provides an industry standard for transmitting data in a secure manner over an insecure network. When enabled, SSL provides security by way of the transport layer, or TCP/IP. The SSL protocol is widely deployed on both Internet and Internet applications and combines four techniques to combat three major network security problems: eavesdropping, tampering, and impersonation. Again, to prevent eavesdropping, SSL defines methods of data encryption. To detect tampering and provide message integrity, SSL uses a digital signature. To prevent impersonation, SSL performs authentication by checking for a digital certificate. The SSL handshake enables the SSL client and SSL server to establish a secure connection. A one-time-only secret key is generated, with which they use to communicate for the duration of the session. The ultimate goal of SSL is to ensure secure transmission of data over an insecure network. You should always check that your web pages are secure before transmitting personal data. To be able to check if your web pages are secure, again, check for the HTTPS on the website name. Again, HTTPS means HTTP plus SSL. So when you see HTTPS, you know for a fact that your data is being securely transmitted over the Internet. This concludes the introduction to Secure Sockets Layer presentation. I hope everyone has gained a better understanding of how the Secure Sockets Layer operates. I hope you will also join me on my next webcast, which will be with Beverly Kingsley on Wednesday, September 30th at 11 o'clock, when we will be presenting configuration of SSL with WebSphere MQ and diagnostic hints and tips. This will be for more intermediate or advanced users. Next slide, page 27. This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link or on support pages points you to webcasts and conference information. Visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The SR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Notifications link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly emails, updates for products of interest to you. I would now like to turn the webcast back over to Joseph.
Thank you, Efren, for a great presentation. At this point, Daisy, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Our next question comes from Chuck Chang.
Could you explain again the difference between CypherSpec and CypherSuite?
Yeah, and basically the CypherSpec is a just specific encryption algorithm and the hash algorithm. And those two alone make up the CypherSpec. Now the CypherSuite is actually additional authentication. So not only do you have the CypherSpec encryption and the hash algorithm, with the CypherSuite, you also have what's called the key exchange and authentication algorithm. So what happens is during the SSL handshake, up front, the SSL handshake asks for authentication and also in the authentication and the key exchange up front. So with the CypherSuite, it does the key exchange and authentication earlier in the SSL handshake than is done with the normal regular CypherSpec.
So CypherSpec is for digital Was it signature?
No. Well, the CypherSpec is just two algorithms. It's just an encryption algorithm and a hash algorithm.
Yeah, so, and that's enough for a digital signature.
Right. But, again, with the Cypher Suite, it's additional authentication that takes place, and also the key exchange is done up front, earlier in the SSL handshake. So the Cypher Suite is just a bit more authentication that is done than with the CypherSpec.
So if I want to use SSL, then I will, as a client, I will present the server which Cypher Suite I can use, or...
That's right. Now, if you're setting up your channels, then this information would have to be predetermined. So that means if you have like a sender channel and then you have a receiver channel, then in that channel definition, like for the product that I use, which is WebSphere MQ, we have to specify that channel, that CypherSpec or the Cypher Suite in the channel definition. So if you were going to use a Cypher Suite from the client, then you would have to have an alternative Cypher Suite also on the server. And on page 13, on slide 13, I show the compatible Cypher Specs with the compatible Cypher Suites.
Okay, so in MQ, there is no negotiation. I got to define the Cypher Suite ahead of time.
Absolutely.
Okay, I got it. Thank you.
Great. Okay, welcome.
Our next question comes from Musa Kumar, Alagahafan.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to know information on the cryptographic hardware, which how do we use that, and like what does it relate to CypherSuite and CypherSpec?
Okay, with the cryptographic hardware, what that does is with SSL, is all software driven. With the cryptographic hardware, that's actual hardware that's installed on the machine. So that's doing all of your encryption and all of your decryption. So the difference is that with SSL, it's software driven. With the cryptographic hardware, that's hardware driven.
Okay, so if we decide to use, say, I'm deciding to use the ASH function, SHA, and as DES, then I need to install the appropriate cryptographic hardware to use that?
To support that, exactly.
Okay, so what is the procedure? Do you have any document that describes the procedure to install or where to get those cryptographic hardware to get installed in a machine, or is it by default when you install the MQ product you get that?
No, I probably have to find out for you about that, but the information that you were looking for would come with the cryptographic hardware. So when you purchase the actual cryptographic hardware that you're installing on, let's say, because ZOS actually uses cryptographic hardware. So when you buy that hardware that you're actually installing on the platform itself, then that information or the documentation would tell you what kind of support that it would provide. And then from there, you'd know how to set up your channels that's going to be communicating to that cryptographic hardware.
Okay, but yeah, just one basic question. Like, I've installed MQ in the machine, and without even installing any cryptographic hardware, still I was able to use the CypherSpec and to do an SSL communication. So, is that a proper way, or is it like? I didn't understand that part.
Right, and that's actually the proper way, because that's the most common way, because most people are using SSL software and software-related, which is, just like you said, installing it with WebSphere MQ on both sides of the channel and then specifying the CypherSpecs and setting up their channels that way. So that is the most common use. But then, like I said, some people want to go a bit further, and they want actual hardware to do the encryption and the hash function in the digital signature, so then they additionally purchase cryptographic hardware. But yes, the way that you're doing it is just fine, and that's the most common way that most people are using it.
Oh, okay, I got you now. So there are two different ways to implement the SSL. One is using the software-driven, and one is the hardware-driven.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Paul Hsu.
Good morning, Paul.
Hi, good morning. My question is that my web Sphere application needs to call a SSO application. And for that, I need the certificate of the SSO. And the WebSphere trust store initially is empty. First question is, should I import the personal certificate of SSO server or the CA certificate?
Okay, you need to extract. So it's not an import, it should be an extract. So they should extract the CA certificate that signs the certificate that is going to be sent over that during the initial SSL handshake. So your partner should understand what CA certificate they use to sign their digital certificate. And then they would extract that and send that to you in a file. And then you would add that to your signer certificate key database.
That extract is the personal certificate or is the CA certificate?
It's the CA certificate that's being extracted.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
At this time, I show no further questions.
Thank you, Daisy. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.